América, cuando cuidas de tu auto, AutoZone cuida de ti. Inscríbete en nuestro programa de recompensas de AutoZone gratis para obtener el mejor valor para ambos, tu auto y tu bolsillo. Disfruta ofertas exclusivas solo para miembros. Y al inscribirte, cuando compres 5 artículos de $20 o más, ganarás $20 en recompensas. América, inscríbete hoy mismo en AutoZone.com/rewards y empieza a ahorrar hoy mismo. Te damos lo que necesitas. Visita AutoZone.com/rewards para restricciones y detalles.
Welcome to the Heat Check. I'm Wes Goldberg. With me, as always, it's David Ramil. How you doing, buddy?
Feeling a little insecure. It's just been so long since we've done a podcast. I'm not sure if I remember my place in the hierarchy of our podcast.
You are firmly in second place, I think.
Excellent. Wait. Second of two? That's not good.
That's good. Top two.
That's good enough.
Yeah, it's been a while, and there's a lot of stuff to talk about. Mainly that the Heat are kind of doing well, but sometimes they look really awful. What is your kind of perspective on this whole season in general?
I think your statement kind of sums it up. A little inconsistent, right? They've been good. Clearly, they're better than they were last season. Mm-hmm. But then again, that's not really saying much considering how bad they were for much of last season. And they're kind of shifting, I wouldn't say on a daily basis, but semi-regularly between a team that kind of relies very heavily on certain players. You know, when they were struggling at the start of the season, a lot of the problems fell on Goran Dragic's shoulders. We saw in the game against the Indiana Pacers on Monday night that Hassan Whiteside was clearly missed, especially in the first half. And so I think they're still kind of looking for a clear identity. And I'm not so sure personally that they're going to find one. I know at the very least they're going to be anchored as far as their defense is concerned. That's been, I would say, their most consistent aspect, even though mm-hmm. parts of that have been, you know, hit or miss on certain games. They've given up a bunch of points, and even in the Pacers game, they were torched early and often by the Pacers as far as a three-pointer was concerned. So I think there's still some hurdles here, and there's certainly going to be some challenges up ahead, and that will show what kind of team this is. I think it's a real test for them over the next few weeks or so when they go on several road trips and face some very tough challengers.
Yeah, it's great. You prefaced a lot of things there, the Pacers game and the tough January that goes ahead. But let's start there with the Pacers game. Wow, what a game last night. I mean, that was better or worse right there with that Oklahoma City Thunder win earlier in the year. I mean,
yeah, you seem particularly excited about it, so I'll let you kind of take the lead on this. But it was a very good game, I will admit that. For me, I guess the Thunder game was a little bit more exciting, but this one was there was just something about the way they came back and the defense and the kind of big shooting from Wade in particular. So,
well, the Heat-Thunder game was great because it was just tight all the way through, right? And then you had Durant on one side and Westbrook on that side, and then you just had like the aging Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh on the other. So you had that kind of interesting, cool dynamic, and the Heat somehow pulled it out in the last few seconds. And it was a great game, and this Pacers game was particularly different because I know that the Thunder and the Heat played in that finals game, like, they're not really rivals, though, right? They just, like, they had that one series. Like, they don't really have many more memorable games outside of that 2012 finals series. And then, you know, but the Pacers have always, and it's a different Pacers team, but it's still Frank Vogel. It's still Eric Spoelstra. Dwayne Wade's still involved. Chris Bosh is still there. Paul George is still there. Paul George has grown significantly since those first few great battles, and that team has changed drastically, but it's still the Heat and the Pacers, and that's really, in this modern NBA, almost the closest thing we have to a real rivalry going on. You know, you have the Warriors and Clippers, they have their thing that they hate each other, but this Heat and Pacers thing, that's real. Like, you could tell it in the comments by the players after the game, that meant something, and I think there's the battle for the Eastern Conference, where that Heat-Thunder game was really not as important as far as conference standings go. So I think for those reasons, like, the stakes were high. And then just that 18-point comeback, the fact that they didn't lead until about 3 minutes left in the game, That was incredible. And then the way that they won, it was the way we've been talking about the Heat is Dwayne Wade hijacks the offense, and I'm guilty of this. He hijacks the offense at late in games. He kills the ball movement. And my whole theory was, look, I don't have a problem with Dwayne Wade taking the ball in crunch time. That's what you pay all-stars for, and that's why they're all-stars, because more times than not, it ends up paying off for you because they're better players than the other players. That's why they're all-stars. But he was doing it so early in the shot clock that I think it was hurting them. And we talk about Spoelstra being pace and space. Well, it was just space. It was just like, let's have everybody stand like as far away from Dwayne Wade as possible and just let him go ISO with 20 seconds left in the shot clock. And that was my problem with it. And the Heat didn't change anything. They did that again. They inbounded the ball to Wade, and he just took the ball and did whatever he wanted with it. But it worked. He blew right past Paul George for the game-tying layup to force overtime, and then went around a screen set by Chris Bosh and hit a really big layup to go up by 3 points, which is ultimately what they won by in overtime. And just the fact that we've been doubting it and doubting it and doubting it for good reason, I still back that up. And then Wade just comes out of nowhere with this, and just how much fun he was visibly having with it was just like, bar none, the best game of the year for me, for the as far as the Heat go. Just so much energy, so much like just almost revenge, or like I told you so by Dwayne Wade, like I still got this. It was incredible.
Yeah, you have to note though that Paul George was kind of nursing a knee injury. You saw him on the sideline, and he mentioned it later on that it limited his mobility defensively. And well, whether or not he's just kind of making excuses at this point because he got blown out by, you know, or blown past by Wade, that's hard to say because it certainly looked comfortable on offense. But you could see that he was resting it on, I guess, like an ice pad or something along those lines.
And it's hard to judge like how much pain he's going through. But, you know, Dwayne Wade's been dealing with knee issues for the last 10 years. It's or since college. I mean, I don't know. I just find like Dwayne Wade's never looked faster to me. And apparently Justice Winslow is also dealing with a knee injury now. I don't know what the degrees of which their knee concerns were and how much pain he was really in, but I see your point. I get it, but also like if they won, he's not talking about his knee, like
right.
And they did give up, like knee or not, no knee. Like they were up by 18 points.
Right, right, and he still dropped 32. I mean, he was ridiculous.
That's true.
And
he was great
and Wade,
in that game. There's no. Yeah. He was very good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's good to see him bounce back. I guess I know a lot of people listening to this probably are much more biased than we are at this point, but Paul George. Well, I think we can separate it a little bit and still recognize that Paul George is really good and still having a great season. And I think a lot of people listening to this are probably kind of, you know, they hate him or they think that he sucks because of the number of battles, the rivalry that we enjoyed over the last 4 years, you know, during the Big Three era, et cetera. So, but he's back. He's great. And, you know, one of the MVP type candidates, that's for sure. I mean, the way he's been playing and maybe even carrying a bigger load in Indiana, carrying a really bad Indiana team that when we spoke to Indiana fan and Hardwood Paroxysm editor Ian Levy at the start of the season, he was convinced his team would suck. And he was trying to argue with you about it, that maybe they might be an under-the-radar good team, and you've proven to be correct on that assessment. And Ian was not. He thought that there wasn't going to be anything there worth writing or seeing, and unfortunately that hasn't been the case. But either way, it was a great team win, a really good performance. You know, Chris Bosh with a very quiet performance, right? 30-plus points, didn't he have?
30, I don't can't. He had 31 points and Paul George at 32.
Right. I mean, you didn't really feel that from him, right? Because I guess there was the struggles at the beginning of the game where nobody was hitting a three-pointer. We missed our first 10, if I'm not mistaken. It was just a lot going on there. And it seemed like this could become a blowout early because Indiana's so perimeter-based and because we couldn't hit a shot. It had the look of a blowout in the making, especially with Whiteside out and McRoberts out and, you know, a number of injuries there. So you kind of got the feeling that maybe Indiana would turn it up. And then something just clicked. And I think it was the insertion of Winslow into the lineup because it really changed the pace of the game. And he was able to really apply a defensive presence to limit Paul George's effectiveness. I think he wound up being I don't know, have the numbers in front of me right now. I looked at them up earlier and it was pretty good. I think he held opponents to like 4 of 13 shooting. when he was being defended. So, I mean, not just George, but other guys that he was covering throughout the course of the game. And that's impressive. That's what he's there for, and he prides himself on it. And he's certainly proven that he's a stalwart defender. So that's all we can expect of him. His offense still has plenty of room to grow, though. I mean, how many times did you see him chuck up a three-pointer from the corner and think, oh, this is it. This is the shot that's going to go in. And from here, he's going to go on a streak and finally connect on a number of shots. And it just never happened. His offense is just terrible.
That's the thing to tame with our expectations with Winslow is his shot. His stroke is pretty inconsistent. And I think we were talking about him as a rookie, like, oh, no, he's got a consistent shooting stroke. But, I mean, it goes to show how very few Duke games Heat fans watched, because it seems different almost every time he shoots it. And even if he makes one, I don't count on – like, I understand that feeling that you're talking about, like, oh, he's going to make one. He's going to – that's when he's going to be developed, right? Like, he'll be a good shooter now. Like, because we're expecting that because he's a rookie. He'll eventually get better. So we're waiting for him to be better. But I don't know. He made, like, one shot that I can remember last night. And I know he finished with, like, 6 or 7 points. Like, yeah, he made one actual jump shot. And the rest of everything else he does are, like, putbacks and off of rebounds and quick little layups and off-ball cuts to the rim and just stuff like that, which is all great. Like, points are points. Right. But as far as shooting goes, he is bad. And he's very poor as a spacer, and it hurts. But his defense is just so good, and he does all these little things in between what everybody else on this roster does that it's a net positive. We all know that he's a positive box plus minus guy. And yesterday, I mean, I would have, like, as much as great as Dwayne Wade was and hitting that game-tying shot and hitting a bunch of big shots in overtime, and Chris Bosh was, you know, the leading scorer for the Heat. I give Winslow the game ball because he put, and I know Paul George was hurt, his knee was bothering, whatever, but he had to defend Paul George, who ended up scoring 32 points. And even Winslow said after the game, he's like, yeah, I thought I was doing a pretty good job on Paul George, and he ended up with 32 points. Like, you know, like he looked, but like, that's the thing with Winslow is it's like, as long as he is giving him a hard time, because with 3.9 seconds left, the Pacers had to inbound that ball, and they were down, and Winslow was suffocating on Paul George. I mean, he stepped up for three straight inbound attempts. Like, I know 3.9 seconds were on the clock, but you have to defend somebody for 5 seconds before that, and they didn't even want to, like, you could tell, they didn't even want to give Paul George the ball. Like, let alone, like, let's force him to take a bad shot. They were saying, don't even let him take the ball. Like, that was the instruction from Spoelstra. You could tell, because Dwayne Wade zeroed in on him, and Winslow zeroed in on him, and they just shut him down. And they finally got him the ball because he's got like a 8'9" wingspan, Paul George does, and they just threw it across the court and were like, just put it up, and then he'll put it up. And that was their, like, Vogel was just like, that's all we got at this point. And they did it and didn't even come close to going in. And that was the game. Winslow smothered him for 15 straight seconds, essentially, because he had to defend him for 5 seconds every time for the three straight inbounds attempts that they did. It was amazing. They forced him to take 2 timeouts on an inbounds attempt. It's great. So, I mean, to me, like, the fact that they stepped up on defense like that, it was just fantastic. And Dwayne Wade, I mean, he was great on defense. And Dragic was, too. We got to give credit to him. Dragic was very good in that game, and he stepped up on D. Miami's defense is very good. When their guards are locked in and, like, want to give the effort, they are a very, very good defense.
So, aside from the brilliance of Wade and Bosh, and the excellence of Winslow on defense in particular, for me, what also stood out, unfortunately, in this case, is the decline of Chris Anderson.
Yes.
Forced to start because of the injury to Hassan Whiteside. I guess it was a completely unexpected move. From what I've seen, there have been kind of conflicting reports that Whiteside was testing out the knee. He woke up sore, coming out, was getting treatment on it, was a late scratch before the game. And then Chris Anderson all of a sudden gets thrust into the starting lineup, and boy, did he not look ready for that assignment. I mean, he was just – he's just not capable. Now, he was doing some good things in that he was getting his body in just the right position to draw fouls, and it kind of slowed the game down, particularly when Indiana looked like they were going to run away with it. But he picked up 3 fouls himself, like in the first 5 minutes, if I'm not mistaken, right. And he just looked generally out of place and forced Spoelstra to go to his bench and bring in – Amar'e Stoudemire, and that was you know, he wasn't as bad as we've expected him to be. I think he's, you know, still very limited as far as athleticism is concerned. And we're never going to get stat from the Phoenix Suns days. That's gone. But he was still overall a little bit more effective than Anderson was. So what's your thought on that? Because that's just, it's sad to see Anderson declining the way he has. A lot of people looked at him as a potential trade chip. I think last night's game, as you pointed out, I think via Twitter, you know, he's basically kissed away whatever trade value he might have had because he's no longer a functioning center. So what are your overall thoughts on it?
Well, that was my takeaway, was that the Heat were forced to start him. They wanted to, and, you know, if Josh McRoberts weren't hurt, I'm pretty sure Amari Stoudemire or Udonis Haslem would have started in that place. But because they were, like, Spoelstra was clearly trying to keep whatever integrity of the rotation he could intact, knowing that it was a late scratch, he didn't have time to redo all his rotation patterns right before the game.
And UD didn't play at all, right?
UD didn't play at all, which I found weird. And I kept trying to look online if he was dealing with any injury concerns, and he wasn't. So I don't know why Haslem wasn't playing. I think my best guess is that Spo had been using Haslem in place of McRoberts, as well as Amari Stoudemire. He's been using that tandem in place of McRoberts. So he's tried to keep them. And when he kind of realized that even Chris Anderson wasn't working, that he was going to have to go small, so there was just no place for UD as the rotations went on. And that's usually what Spoelstra does, is like, you know what, he didn't play because it wasn't going to work. He's never like designed Haslam's not playing tonight. It's just like that just didn't fit into the rotations. But that's my best guess. But I think if Whiteside does miss time, and he might be missing more time, according to reports, he might miss a game or two more, I think Haslem starts in his place because Anderson is not good. And at least Haslem has been playing somewhat this year. And we've seen that, I mean, at least I've seen this decline the last 2 years, is he just doesn't have the energy. He doesn't have the mobility. He's rarely in position to defend the rim. Like, he's in position to do hustle plays and stuff, like you mentioned, draw fouls, maybe get a rebound here and there, box out. But to really defend the rim at a high level, he's very rarely in position. Can't close out in the paint. He's just old, and that's what happens with guys like that. And he's done, and he's at $5 million right now for a salary for a year. Nobody's going to pay him that. I mean, I don't see a way where a team's like, we need a veteran big, and we're willing to shell out $5 million for this guy. I just don't see it. The Heat are going to have to pay him, and they haven't been able to trade him in the summer or to this point, and I just don't see that changing. But
nobody's that desperate for a big man, particularly when the shift around the league is for smaller lineups.
True.
For a guy that's big, perhaps, but just big at this point. He's not mobile, he's not capable, and it's unfortunate.
And for the Heat, he's a good locker room presence, but for another team, he's not, right? Because, like, he's a good locker room presence in Miami because he knows Miami, he loves Miami, he wants to finish his career here from what we understand.
Right.
And the players love
New
him.
Orleans,
and that's basically
New Orleans
what
already has
for.
Kendrick Perkins there, you know, to provide that aging mentorship role. They don't need a guy like Anderson. Nobody needs a guy like Anderson. And I feel like I should interject here because I got a chance to cover the recent Magic and Heat game the day after Christmas. And I mentioned this to you, and Anderson was just, despite what his personality is, you know, to Jason Jackson and a couple other guys, like you see him being kind of, you know, outlandish with the tattoos and whatnot, but he was the most chill guy and really cool with everybody, recognized everybody in the Amway Center, talked to a few cops there that were there for security. It was bizarre for me. Like, you don't picture him being that kind of a guy, but he really is a man of the people there, so he's probably much more comfortable in Miami than he would be anywhere else. And that's basically his only role. In fact, there's even a piece in the Sporting News that came out recently about the role that he's transitioned into, as specifically as a mentor, where he's let everybody know on the roster what he can do. He's bonded with Tyler Johnson and Justice and a couple other guys there. And then he and Haslem have formed like this really peculiar friendship off the court where they do a lot of things together. And we've even seen pictures in the past of them fishing and going to the Everglades together and things like this. And it's transitioned into this kind of mentorship role where they both share it now as the aging veterans that have been there, been comfortable. They've won titles there. So it's a really interesting perspective on what Anderson's role is with the Heat now.
I'd be surprised if we saw Chris Anderson really play like important minutes. Like, he's where Juwan Howard was a few years ago. He's basically transitioning into a coach position. And I think that's ultimately what Chris Anderson's going to end up doing. He's probably going to coach.
And think so?
Yeah, I think he would. I wouldn't have said that maybe even a year ago, but I've been noticing the same thing. Like, he's been taking on a mentor role. He loves basketball. It may have left him a little bit earlier than he wanted to. Given that he signed that large contract for a long term, he probably wasn't thinking that he was basically done, right? Like, he basically signed that contract. He had a half of a season left, and that was it. I think there might be something coaching in the future for him.
I could see him kind of working in as far as like a player development kind of guy, especially
for something like that. Yeah.
You know, so especially given his troubled past and the way he's kind of rebounded from that and his life experiences, clearly, you know, growing up in poverty or whatever, all the things that have shaped him into the person that he is today, his suspension, he's got a buttload of experience there that he could pass along to younger guys and kind of tell them, you know, keep your nose clean, you know, do things the right way and you'll be rewarded for it. And there's a, you know, the fact that he was in the D League, that he was basically washed up and that, you know, he was facing potential jail time. All that went into shaping the person he was. And, you know, Miami gave him a chance and he certainly blossomed here in the Heat with the Heat. So I can see what you're saying there as far as giving a lot of perspective and some mentoring role.
Yeah, I could definitely see it. And I think that's where he's at right now. He's just not playable. He was like a minus 24 in 10 minutes. Like, how is that even possible?
I don't know.
It's wild, and
that's what's happening. He can't get off the ground, right? I mean, I don't even see him. Like, I think he was under the boards once trying to grab a rebound, and he couldn't get any lift there, and eventually he kind of just flailed around. I think they wound up calling a foul in his favor. But, you know, and he's going up against guys like Ian Mahimi. It's not like he's facing guys like you know, Whiteside or DeAndre Jordan or other these guys that are elite level, you know, rim protectors and rebounders. And it's just kind of weird to see him in his diminished capacity.
Yeah. So I think they end up going with Haslam and a combination of Haslam and Amar'e Sarr, probably playing some small ball. I don't think they start Bosh at center, but they go to Bosh at center pretty quickly and, rotate him and Stoudemire and then do a rotation of, Dang, Winslow and Gerald Green on the forward positions, and that's what they're going to be doing until Whiteside gets back, which could be a couple games from what we understand. But as opposed to talking about Anderson, who can't play anymore, let's talk about Dwayne Wade, who still can play. I've never seen him move as fast as he did on that second layup in overtime where he snaked around that Chris Bosh screen. I mean, it looked like 2006 Dwayne Wade. I mean, he moved that quickly, I think.
Well, I don't know. I think we forget how quickly he was.
Yeah, but, maybe.
It's quick in comparison to the guy that we saw even during the, you know, especially with the last 2 years of the Big Three era where he was obviously kind of messed up by injuries and starting to transition to that old man game. It's quick, and he's looked great, and he's played a number of games, and he certainly deserves
all-star. He's only missed one game, and that's because his kid was in the hospital.
Yeah, I hear you, and I agree 100%. I mean, Would you say at this point, without going into too much detail about the Pacers game, would you say he's an all-star?
Dwayne Wade?
Yes.
Absolutely. Okay. He's the top five shooting guard in the league right now. I mean,
okay, well, what does that even mean? I mean, with positions being what they are, and we're looking at backcourt players in the Eastern Conference, you've got guys like Kemba Walker, you've got Jud Wall, Kyle Lowry, you put Wade in there above them.
I put him right there, right?
Right there? Or below or above them?
John Wall has been playing really well lately.
So has Kemba Walker.
Yeah, Kemba Walker has. And so has Lowry, but so has Dwayne Wade. So I think Wade gets it because of the all-star quality that he has.
Sure.
I think it ends up being probably John Wall and Dwayne Wade. Unless Lowry gets that like late Bieber push.
That's right. That's right. I forgot about that.
But I don't see, like, Kemba Walker's in a tough position. Like, I see him making it as a reserve, but I'd put Dwayne Wade over Kemba Walker right now.
Okay. All right. Yeah. All right. So enough of the All-Star. That's a subject for a future podcast, I'm sure.
Sure.
But his game yesterday, that left-handed dunk on the lob from Goran Dragic. Yeah. I mean, I didn't know what to expect. That we haven't seen that kind of highlight in years.
Yep. Where's the long form story on what Dwayne Wade's done different with his body? Because he even said, he's like, he put a lot of work into that. What the hell does that mean? He put a lot of work into that. Like, I don't go out there, like, you and I couldn't go out into the schoolyard and be like, let's go work on a one-handed alley-oop. Like, What does that mean? He's put a lot of work. I want to. Where? What has he done differently? Is what I want to know. Did he go to Germany? Did is he got some weird hyperactive chamber in his bedroom that he just sits in on a 24-hour basis? Like, what's going on?
I think it's hyperbaric, but I like whatever. Hyperactive though. Hyperactive. That sounds awesome. It should be a hyperactive chamber. Kind of just you go there and you like take too much Pop Rocks and like you know, soda, and you just kind of go, you know, like just
bounce around the walls.
Yeah,
it's like a human pinball machine.
Yes, the hyperactive chamber. Just go spaz out over there.
Yeah, that's where Norris Cole hangs out.
Nice, excellent. I don't know what he's doing differently, but I can tell you that that pregame in Orlando, he works just as hard as anybody. Now, I know that Steph Curry's pregame warm-up is getting all the buzz, and deservedly so, because he's doing some incredible things there. But Wade, considering his age and the number of miles on that body, he's just running sprints, jogging up the court. I mean, shooting. And it's just, there's an impressive dedication there beforehand. And I don't know if that was missing, not having had the opportunity to cover him in years past, but you know, there, I don't know if it's different, but it's still impressive nonetheless. And I guess you have to kind of figure that he was somewhat limited in years past because of injuries and nagging injuries and the whole, what was the phrase they use? The program that he was on, the maintenance program, right?
The maintenance program, yeah.
Yeah, that was the phrase that they kept using for him, the maintenance program, where he would sit out every other game. That doesn't look to be the case this year. He looks spry, he looks quick.
And he had that quote, he's like, let's put that talk to sleep, right, about the not playing back-to-backs. Are you ready to put that talk to sleep, Dave? Because it's been years where he's been not being able to play, not every back-to-back, but most back-to-backs, he's not been able to do it. He's had to take random games off because of, quote-unquote, maintenance, knee issues. What happened?
The Indiana game was a back to back. I mean, the Indiana game was a back to back, and he played excellent. I mean, he's catching a one handed alley oop and dunking it in traffic. I mean, that's if you need any more evidence that maybe he's at full strength. I mean, I think that was it, and he played even better following that move. So maybe he just gave him a little confidence. He had that quick cut at the end for the game tying shot. I mean, there was so much good about what he did yesterday that it's hard to deny that he might be right. Now, of course, he could go out on Wednesday and drop an egg out there and just, you know, go like 4 of 22 or something like that. But you hope that he doesn't take that step back, and he looks like he's in good shape. So, I mean, I'm going to hesitantly.
He hasn't had that kind of game this season either. He's pretty consistent.
Yeah, yeah. He's taking less shots overall, so his points per game numbers are down. But, I mean, he's been consistent. His field goal percentage is what it was last year. So I think he's been pretty solid. And you know, I think he's been very good. I don't know if he's necessarily the best guard in the Eastern Conference. I don't know if he's the top two or top three guard in the Eastern Conference. But he's been very good and certainly what Heat fans wanted to see out of him this year.
My question is, so Wade's clearly had a bounce back as far as his health goes. I don't know if he is doing something differently, if he is working harder on his body, whatever it might be. I wonder, and my question to you is, do you think this happens if LeBron James is still in Miami?
I mean, that's such a difficult question. Yeah. I mean, there's so much. We're seeing now the kind of impact LeBron has where he's – you know, we always knew this was the case, although it was a little bit more balanced in the first 2 years of the Big Three era. But looking at LeBron's usage numbers in Cleveland, where he's being depended on even more heavily than he was here, which is arguably probably the biggest reason, aside from the whole hometown BS, the thing that drove him away from Miami was that he was being relied on so heavily and that he couldn't count on a guy like Wade, etc. So it's hard to say that if LeBron had stayed for whatever reason that Wade would have continued to take a step back, and maybe he wouldn't have put himself in that position that he did this offseason to train better, to lose weight, which he obviously did, to regain some of that quickness that he had lost. It's hard to say. It's impossible to say because you don't know. You could always just say, well, hell, I don't have to be as quick as I once was because I've got this guy, number six, who's going to be, you know, incredibly dominant and make up for a lot of our mistakes the way he did in 2013, 2014.
Right. Number six, Mario Chalmers.
Right. I'm sorry. Did I say anybody else? I mean,
no, we were talking about
he's
Chalmers
a guy that's no longer
time.
Here, right? Yeah.
The Chalmers got traded and Wade stepped it up, and now he's been the go-to guy because Chalmers isn't the go-to guy anymore.
Exactly. I mean, it's tough to fill the hole that's Chalmers size. I mean, if nothing else, just because of the 6'3" body and the ego that's probably five times that size.
I still see people knocking Chalmers on Twitter, Heat fans. I'm just like, come on, the guy's not even here. Give him a break. He's a Dragic. What did he do? He got the ball in the corner. He thought about driving, and he was like, no, I'm going to take the three. And then he ended up traveling because he kind of took one extra step there. He like moved his pivot foot or whatever it was, and then you know the refs called him for a travel. This was last night at the Pacers game. The refs called him for a travel, and I see like four people on Twitter be like, oh, what a Chalmers move. I'm like, dude's not even here anymore. Like, come on.
I mean, look, we've talked about it a number of times, so we probably shouldn't spend too much time on it. You know, Chalmers is a legend here, for better or for worse. I think, you know, fans want to kind of harp on the fact that everybody yelled at him, the fact that he made boneheaded plays. Those are inarguable facts about Chalmers. He was getting yelled at. There were times that made you scratch your head and wonder what the hell he was thinking. But there were also times when he was more than willing, as you've pointed out a number of times, to drive against big men, to go into the hoop. You know, when everybody else was frightened of Roy Hibbert, Chalmers was the one guy who said, you know what, I don't care. I'm going to go up against him.
That's right. He didn't care.
No, he didn't. Yeah, and you can say that that's a symptom of Chalmers being Chalmers and the Chalmers ego or whatever, but man, you know, he took big shots. He was a factor in four championship level seasons and, you know, two rings, and I'll never forget him, and I remember him fondly. But enough about Mario Chalmers.
Yeah, that does it for our Chalmers Love Fest for the for our podcast, once a podcast Love Fest that we have for Rio.
I think that's a natural transition though into Goran Dragic, and particularly his play that's improved of late, and the kind of chemistry, as you pointed out, with Dwayne Wade.
Well, we've seen a lot of stuff where they're connecting on these half court passes and that lob that you mentioned, and things like that. They had this the other pass a couple games ago where he found Dwayne Wade in transition for another great layup, wide open layup, and that's all fun. That's all great, right? But that's not necessarily. I don't think that's a mark of chemistry so much as I think just, you know, good defense, if that makes sense. If you know you get a steal, you go for the fast break, and Wade's just darting down the court, it doesn't take much chemistry to figure out, oh, I'll pass it to that guy, he's wide open. But
you have to love what he said on the lob, where I think you mentioned it. He was just super honest about it and said, you know what, it could be a turnover, probably is going to be a turnover, but you know, screw it, you got to take a chance.
Yeah, I love that quote. What a great quote. He's thinking, he's like, this is probably a turnover, but okay. Like, what a great quote that is. It's like, whatever. I love that quote. That's my top quote of the season so far.
Right.
It's so honest because it's very real. Like, that's how everybody plays. Like, if that's how every shot, this shot might not go in, but okay. Like, you're just going to take it. And I love the freedom that quote represents. It's just like, I'm just going to do this because this is what I do. And this is what I'm comfortable doing. This is the Eli Manning, if he's sort of open, just throw it kind of thing. Like, and it worked for two Super Bowls for Eli, and it's working for Goran Dragic right now, and I'm sure it was worked for countless other athletes, and it's great. And as far as the chemistry goes, my favorite thing right now in Heat games is, and we talked on an earlier podcast, and I mentioned my favorite thing about watching the Heat games is watching Justice Winslow. That was my favorite thing. And I've moved on. I love watching Justice Winslow, but I've moved on to just seeing Goran Dragic bring the ball up. That is my favorite thing to see in a Heat game. I don't want to see Dwayne Wade bring the ball up. I like seeing Goran bring the ball up, and that's my favorite thing. If an offensive possession starts with Goran bringing the ball up and initiating a screen, I am through the roof excited. I don't care if the ball goes in. I don't care if they get a good shot. I just want to see that because that's how you develop the offense, and I love seeing Dwayne Wade off the ball because we used to talk about how much fun and how great Dwayne Wade developed off the ball when LeBron was here. Oh, he's turned into one of the best off-ball cutters in the league. We said that like a million times. Everybody did.
Right.
And then Wade leaves, and he stops, understandably. And then we get Dragic, and he continues to do the same stuff where he brings the ball up. And I think all this was a lack of trust from Eric Spoelstra, deservedly or not, that Dragic knew how to run the offense. And it takes a while, and especially when a lot of these guys have been around, like Wade and Bosch, basically. Bosch does a lot of initiating from the elbow. We don't talk about that nearly enough. And Wade does a lot of initiating his entire career. Because he's a guard ultimately, and now that it seems that Spo trusts Dragic a little bit more, and Dragic understands a little bit more, and Ethan Skolnick had that great piece about how he's been more comfortable with his teammates. He understands what his teammates need. I mean, the fact that Wade and Whiteside, that little pick and roll in the middle of the court, was like their only offensive play for like the first 3 weeks of the season. And it's since developed since then. Dragic is figuring it out. He's got a nice relationship with Deng, a nice relationship with Bosch. I love it. And we're developing, and it's only going to get better than this going forward in the season. It's great that he's a real point guard that does that little probing thing now, and he's really in his zone, and it's not lineup specific anymore. He has fun with more spacing lineups, but it's not lineup specific like it once was. He's just doing it as a starting guard, and it's great, and I love it.
I do too. I mean, there's what's not to like. I mean, he's kind of whirling around there in the lane, spinning a lot like Steve Nash. And the comparison has been made, and it's a good one. You know, he just stops on a dime. And lays up this hook shot there that's, you know, you don't expect it to fall, and all of a sudden there he is. And it's like, it's impressive as hell. And you have to say that with the combination of Ben Udrych and Tyler Johnson, who we didn't talk about, the point guard position, or at least the guard position, I don't know if I'm necessarily going to call Tyler Johnson a point guard at this point, but let's say the guard position has all of a sudden become a position of strength for Miami, which is something that we haven't had over the years of the Big Three era. So it's a very nice thing to see, I think, for Heat fans. I mean, Dragic has been, I think, as good as advertised. I think he did struggle, but you have to, as you pointed out, you know, he's certainly much more comfortable now, and you kind of have to just dismiss what happened early in the season. And my concern, though, with him is it looks like he's almost going to get injured on every play, right? When he dives there for a layup, you almost expect him to get hurt almost like 5 or 6 times per game. And that's frightening because he doesn't seem like the biggest guy out there, and he puts his body in a position where he can get really, really hurt out there. I know he's had lingering back problems, and that's my only concern with Dragic, is that now that we're as heavily reliant on him as we are, and he's been such a big part of the Heat offense, that he won't be limited by injuries moving forward.
Yeah, and that's the way he plays, similar to Wade earlier in his career, where it's just, okay, he's just gonna keep going, right? He's just gonna keep going to the player if he's in front of him, he's just gonna keep going to the rim, it doesn't matter. He does that thing where it's just like the defender gets in front of him, between him and the rim, and he just takes one more step and he just like moves his arm and suddenly he's, you know, making a layup, and it's just, he's a really great finisher, and that's what we know about Dragic, and that's what we were told Dragic was when he traded for him, and we're like, really? Because, I mean, I saw it when, I used to watch the Suns because they were fun, and I saw it when he was with Phoenix all the time, especially that All-NBA year he had.
Right.
And then he got to the Heat, and I was like, really? He's not doing it anymore. What happened? And there was a real worry there that, like, maybe the Heat bit off more than they can chew with this contract. They might have put themselves in a commitment that's not necessarily going to, there's not going to be a return on investment here that they were looking for. And then all of a sudden it seems like something's just clicked lately, and he's doing all of the things. He's certainly more comfortable because now he's finishing at the rim like we expected. He's hitting more shots now. His shooting percentage has gotten better. He's more comfortable initiating with things. I mean, like I said, he's got that thing with Bosch and Deng on his pick and pops and pick and rolls that are going on. It's great. And I think it's just going to keep getting better if we noticing this trend, and it's between Wade and Dragic, I think they're playable together now. And as long as Dragic is bringing the ball up, and even they do this little dribble handoff. I mean, before Wade was bringing the ball up, and now Dragic is bringing the ball up and like really quickly do this dribble handoff to Wade, but at least he's touching it, and I think that means something.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they're definitely more playable together now. It's not going to be necessarily something with the stagger, which I think was a theory going on for a while now, but we can move on to another player, Justice Winslow, who's been fantastic on defense, but are you concerned with his offense?
Concern isn't the right word because, you know, you have to keep in mind that he's only 19, that it's his rookie year, but the comparisons to players, ones that even Paul George made after the game, comparing Winslow to himself and Kawhi Leonard, I think that's the... That would be wonderful to think that Winslow has that high of a ceiling as him, but I just don't see that possibility at this point. So, you know, even looking back at Kawhi or maybe even a guy like Jimmy Butler, looking at the way they performed their rookie seasons, Winslow is substantially worse as far as his offense is concerned. Yeah. His shot is not going to fall. So I'm not sure that I'm concerned yet because you hope that he can make a turnaround throughout the course of his career since he's still so young, since he's got such, you know, he's got so much time, hopefully, to continue building that part. But when he's out there, like I mentioned before, you can't count on him to make a shot down. So I saw him quoted as saying that at least he's going to keep taking that shot, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
He's not, his confidence isn't shot, even if the shot isn't falling. So it's something to be said about that he's going to continue to take the shot. Hopefully some of them will fall as the season progresses. That hasn't been the case up to this point. So I think he washes it out. And I want to point out something that I saw on Twitter just today. I don't know if you saw it or not, but obviously Winslow hasn't been included in the Rookie of the Year talk because you've got Chris Stapps, you've got Karl-Anthony Towns, etc. But the way he plays defense, you know, a lot of people put much more of a premium on offense than they do on defense. Now, conversely, if his offense was as good as his defense has been and his defense was as bad as his offense has been, wouldn't he still be garnering that kind of Rookie of the Year consideration?
Well, I think there's a few things that play there. I think there's a lot. Just Kristaps has been so star-studded, right? Like, he's in New York. He's making really great highlight plays. And then you obviously have plenty of other rookies that have been taken above him and things like that. I just, when it comes to defense, I feel like Winslow is better at one thing than any other rookie is right now.
Yes.
But it's defense. It's not points, it's not rebounds, it's not steals. It's just keeping people from even getting the ball or getting good shots off. And it's only something you can see when you're watching the Heat. You know, I know he's got positive plus minus, but we all hate plus minus. We just know that his plus minus is related to what it is related to that defense that he's playing and those other little things that he does in between the other players. And unfortunately, not everybody watches every Heat game or any Heat games unless they're on national TV. And Winslow hopefully got a bunch of props yesterday from people that were watching NBA TV. I don't really know what the national reaction was to Winslow. I know that people are like, oh, wow, the Heat, that was a really exciting game between the Heat and the Pacers. It was anybody's game, which was true. Paul George looked fine. Chris Bosh looked fine.
There's a story on ESPN.com about him by Israel Gutierrez, who's obviously a Miami guy.
Right.
But then there was also a piece on Sports Illustrated by Rob Mahoney.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah.
Did you read that? Rob, and we know Mahoney watches tons of basketball. Unfortunately, he's not that big voice that Winslow's going to need to really drive. And we love Rob Mahoney, but he's not the voice that's going to drive Winslow's Rookie of the Year campaign. I don't know. Maybe we could start something here on the Heat Check. But
well, I mean, beyond just Rookie of the Year, which is basically a meaningless award anyway.
Sure.
The point is that he's making a huge impact in his own limited way. And I think it's worth pointing out. And I mean, look, I know that I wasn't high on him because there's just this overall indifference in his game. But maybe that's just the way he is. Maybe he's just workmanlike in his approach. He keeps building on it. He's willing to do the little things, and he gets neither too high nor too low. And that's probably in his best interest, because right now, if he was, you know, so emotional, then every time he missed a three-point shot like he did on several occasions yesterday, then he wouldn't be able to play the defense he did on Paul George when it was really essential for him to do so. So, I mean, it's probably turned out better that he's not the kind of guy that you want being overly emotional and demonstrative and things of that sort. And he's just been a guy who just does his work, gets in and gets out, and it's paid off wonderfully. I mean, he's making an impact, and that's more than you expect out of a guy who was drafted 10th to a team that was already fully loaded with veterans. And you have to point out that he was in there at clutch moments, and Luol Deng, who's making $10 million, known for his perimeter defense, was on the bench.
That's true. As far as emotion goes in sports, I think I got that weeded out really quick. I mean, when I was a kid, my dad's a huge golf fan and watched Tiger Woods every chance he can get. And my biggest problem with Tiger was like, well, he's so boring. He doesn't get excited. Like, you're telling me that was a great putt, and he's just like, yeah, whatever. Like, he doesn't show the excitement that I was used to seeing from my NBA stars and my football stars when I was growing up.
Right.
And my dad was just like, well, he's focused. He doesn't get too high. He doesn't get too low. He just wants to win. And I'm like, well, does it hurt that much to just let out a cheer every once in a while? He's like, he's just not that person. And I always found that very strange when I was a kid. And eventually I grew to appreciate Tiger as I watched him, aka my dad forced me to watch Tiger Woods, forced me to watch golf when I was a kid, and I'm glad he did, because I realized, like, this guy's really good. And every once in a while he'd hit a 20-foot putt and then just do that little fist bump that you always see Tiger Woods photograph. And that was very rare that he did that, but every once in a while he did it. And we've seen, like, maybe twice this year, maybe three times this year, Justice Winslow let out, like, some emotion. Like, I remember there was a huge dunk that he had over somebody, and he just, like, went crazy. He, like, flexed and everything. And we're like, holy crap.
Really?
Yeah, it was one time.
I've got to see the replay because I don't believe it, you know?
it happened, I swear to God. That to me was like, oh, he's Tiger Woods, not like, you know, in the mass scale of Tiger Woods and what everything he was, but that's like his demeanor. He's Tiger Woods. He just plugs away, does his work. He's dedicated to his craft. He just wants to get better. I mean, Tiger, not to go on a Tiger Woods podcast, but he was a top golfer in the world and he changed his stroke. I mean, he changed his swing. I'm like, who does that? Like, Justice Winslow is just, he wants to go to work. He wants to get better at his craft, no matter what it means. And every once in a while, he'll get really excited, but it's only when he did something that he really worked hard at, a 20-foot putt or hitting that dunk in transition, whatever it was he wanted to do.
No, you don't even have to look as far as golf is concerned. I mean, look at Tim Duncan.
Sure.
I mean, I think you made the comparison the last time we talked about this because Duncan's not known for being overly demonstrative and not overly emotional, and clearly he's been somewhat effective over the course of his career. So I think you have to give him a pass. Mm-hmm. So if he can turn out to be half as good as Tim Duncan has been, it'll still be a hell of a draft pick for Miami.
Yeah, I think 30% of what Tim Duncan has been would be just fine. I don't expect him to be Kawhi Leonard or Paul George. I don't think that's fair. I think we like to try to lump these guys in, especially because of the immediacy of these guys coming on. I've heard the Tony Allen comparison if he never gets his offense going. I think his offensive instincts are way better than Tony Allen. For all of the great defensive instincts that Tony Allen has on offense, it seems like he's just never even cared.
If you had to make a comparison, I don't know that I can. I'm kind of stuck, and maybe you have to go back even further in NBA history, and I'm not quite sure at this point where he fits in.
People have made the Draymond Green comparison, but I don't know if he's the past. Draymond Green wasn't the passer he is now. He wasn't his rookie year. But it's just so hard to say that he'll develop into that kind of guy, or if he'll be within that framework that Draymond Green is in to pass it to Steph Curry and get an assist nearly every time.
He's certainly thicker physically than, you know, Kawhi or Jimmy Butler or Paul George, certainly, who's much longer and leaner. But I mean, he's a little bit closer physically, at least, to Draymond Green, who's definitely a load. And it's funny because I'm looking at him being listed 6'7". And he is not 6'7". Maybe he's 6'7" with 4 inches of hair there, you know? No, right. I'm serious. I mean, I've stood next to him. I know he's not 6'7". I know that for a fact.
And that's absolutely ridiculous. So, he's probably closer to 6'4".
Yeah, that's probably a pretty accurate one there.
Well, he doesn't even look 6'7" on TV. And most people look at least 6'5" on TV. I mean, Dwayne Wade looks 6'3" on TV, and he's not even close to that.
I mean, I think he's about 6'3", actually.
You think? Okay.
I think he's 6'3". I think he's listed at 6'4", right? I think.
Dwayne Wade, yeah. I think he's listed like 6'4", 215 for like the last 8 years. I don't think they bother changing it. But, I don't know what kind of comparison there would be. I mean, if he could be somewhere in the middle of Tony Allen, right, where, okay, we know this guy's just going to perform on defense, and Kawhi or Paul George or something, like, I just... My thing with Kawhi and Paul George is that they create their own shot. And I don't know if Winslow's going to get there, where he creates his own shot. I'm not saying he cannot, but I'm also saying I don't know if he gets there. So maybe something somewhere in the middle between Draymond Green and Tony Allen, something in the middle there.
Okay.
I would take that.
Yeah.
That would be just fine. The good news for him is he could just be what the Heat need him to be. He's athletic enough, certainly. He's 19, he's young enough, and he's got a great learning structure in place, a great coaching structure in place that I think that they're going to put that work into it. And I think they're just going to mold him into what they need him to be.
Sounds good. I think we should probably look ahead to, Miami and where they place in the Eastern Conference. Certainly, a lot more bogged down than it has been in years past. Although you have teams playing substantially better throughout the whole conference. They're no longer the Eastern Conference, even though that was probably somewhat overstated. But there's certainly a number of teams there that are playing much better than they have been in past seasons.
Sure. And it's, like you said, it's loaded. It's It seems like the standings change. Well, they do. The standings change every day between who's in second and who's in sixth. And the Heat right now are in third. They're 21-13, 3 games behind Cleveland. I think Cleveland, with Kyrie back now, they're 3 games up. I don't see anybody catching them unless they suffer some sort of injury, a Kevin Love or another Kyrie injury, which is entirely possible. Kyrie has missed more time than Dwayne Wade since LeBron left. But just had to throw that in there.
No, good, good. I'm glad you remind people of it.
Yeah. All the Cleveland fans that I'm sure are listening to this podcast are seething right now. It's so hard to tell. I mean, where do you see them as, just let's ignore record, right? Like, they're up there, that they're fine. Okay. So Chicago's wildly inconsistent. Atlanta, not what they were, still good. Kyle Korver's missed a bunch of threes. That's like the biggest thing going on with Atlanta. Toronto looks good most of the time, like really, and sometimes like really, really good. Indiana and Boston, who both are 19-15, they could look really good at times. Their defense is strong. They've got some playmakers on both sides of the ball. Detroit with Andre Drummond is doing some things, and even Orlando is in and out of the playoff mix. So I think right now I see Miami in that upper echelon, Cleveland, Chicago, Miami, Atlanta, Toronto, right? That's like your top five.
And I would say so.
Okay. And then if Cleveland pulls away, then we're talking about Chicago, Miami, Atlanta, Toronto kind of battling for that two seed.
I think when you look at the Eastern Conference, there's only one great team.
Right.
And that's Cleveland. And that's because of the talent on the roster, because they have LeBron James, who's doing, you know, he's struggling somewhat with his shot, but he's still doing so much other, you know, things on the court, so many other things on the court that clearly they're still excelling in many regards. Other than that, in the Eastern Conference, I really think that the only team that is also capable of reaching greatness is the Heat. I think that everybody else is capable of being very good or being very bad. I certainly think that applies to Miami as well, and right, certainly applies to Cleveland if they should get stuck by injury. But looking at the Heat roster, their ceiling is very, very high. And I think it's higher than a Chicago's at this point. It's higher than an Atlanta. It's higher than a Toronto. I think Miami is the one team other than Cleveland that can flirt with greatness. Having said that, I'm not sure that they will. They've just been too inconsistent, and I'm sure we'll talk about this more in the future, but their schedule throughout January is brutal, and we could easily see this team kind of floundering around 500 and not reaching the potential that we think that they're capable of, or certainly that I think they're capable of.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up. And I'm looking right now at their point differential, which is hit or miss as far as judging teams. I know by the end of 82 games, it's pretty accurate. We're a little bit more than 30 games in right now, but Cleveland is at a plus 5.8, and the only other team, well, the second closest team in those five teams that we just talked about is the Heat at a plus 2.8. Chicago's plus 1.9, Atlanta's 1.5, and Toronto's a plus 2.7, so right there with the Heat. Take that for what it's worth, but I think the Heat, They're slowing games down a lot, though. They're the only team in the playoffs right now averaging less than 100 points per game. They're also holding teams to less than 95 points a game. Right. That's not pace adjusted, which with the Heat, I don't like to use pace adjusted stats. We can just get off on the stats geek tangent right now, just because they play so slow. So adjusting for 48 minutes or adjusting for 100 possessions just doesn't really portray them accurately, because they purposely play slow. They purposely don't reach 100 possessions, you know what I mean, as fast as other teams do. So I don't like adjusting for pace for the Heat. But that serves them well, right, going into the playoffs, because everybody tells you the game slows down in the postseason. And if the Heat are used to playing that way, like Cleveland was against Golden State, like they stayed in there for the first three games because things slow down a little bit, that serves Miami well. I mean, practice makes perfect. And if they go into the playoffs against a team that wants to move a little bit faster, a.k.a. Atlanta or Toronto or Boston, or even Indiana to a certain respect, then that does favor them. So I like Miami in the playoffs because they have a staple play, that Wade Whiteside pick and roll. They have shooters that can get hot, so if they do get hot, that double exponentially helps their chances. And then they have guys that have been there before with Wade and Bosch. I like what and they're like you said, their staple really as a team is their defense, is that pillar that they rely on. I like them. I like them a lot.
I agree. I just worry about a couple of things. One, that if you know, obviously injury would affect anybody, but injury could affect Miami much worse. Right now they're dealing with Whiteside. Yeah. It's not expected to be a long-term issue, but it clearly limits what they can do. And then as far as their overall standings, you know, that record of January could be a really bad one for them. And if they wind up losing a number of games, then they could fall to a point where they won't have home court advantage, which I think they really depend on heavily in the playoffs. And that's a concern for me, is that they might not be able to withstand this throughout the course of the regular season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's certainly some depth issues at center if Whiteside can't stay healthy. I mean, if Whiteside even gets hurt for half a game, it can change a series, because as we saw last night, there is just zero depth behind him. And I think that speaks less to Anderson and more just to the lack of depth in general. And you really don't want to move Bosch to playing center. I mean, he did it for 4 years, but you don't want to make him do it full-time again just because the roster's not built that way right now. So that's certainly a concern. Let's look ahead to January, though. 11 of 14 games on the road in January. I mean, they had a very favorable schedule in 2015. 2016 starting off, they're undefeated. They're 2-0. But and it's nice to have that little cushion. But these next few games is going to be tough. 11 of 14 games on the road. That's tough, and not against easy competition.
Right. Over the next week, they have Wednesday's game against the Knicks. You know, should be winnable. Although that's a tough one to predict. It's at home, so that's good. And you know, New York's playing somewhat decently. They're still a capable team. A little inconsistent, although Aaron Aflalo had a big game recently, so that should be an interesting matchup that Miami should win. But then to go up against teams like Phoenix, Utah, and Denver, those are the three easiest on a six-game road trip, and yet all of them are potential pratfalls. You know, Phoenix, they're obviously going through a number of issues in-house, injuries. Everything is kind of affecting the way they're playing at this point. So you figure that might be the easiest of the six game. But even a team like Denver, you know, that's been a typically, traditionally difficult place for Miami to win, especially in the midst of a road trip. So nothing is going to come easily for Miami at this point. And, of course, then they face, you know, high-end competition like Oklahoma City, the Clippers, and Golden State. So you could see a six-game road trip here, and easily Miami could go to 2-4 over that span, and then all of a sudden wind up being the seventh or eighth seed in the Eastern Conference. And then it doesn't get better from there, because they come home, have one game against Milwaukee, and then another five-game road trip against the toughest part of the Eastern Conference in Washington, Toronto, Chicago, and again another matchup with Brooklyn and Milwaukee. But Brooklyn's already managed to beat us at one point, so you never can take any opponent lightly. So January is a very, very, very tough one for Miami, and we knew that coming in. We knew that they had a soft early schedule. They weren't able to take advantage of some wins, particularly that Nets one. That Nets game was a disappointing one. And now you look at what they have facing them over the next couple of weeks, and they could wind up easily going, let's say, if the next 14 games in January, they could lose 10 of those.
Yeah, I think we'd be happy with 7-7 at this point. Six games on the road, a home game against Milwaukee. Milwaukee's not an easy out, and then five more games on the road, and then a home game against Atlanta. I mean, that's basically the rest of the month. Also, three games on ESPN, which is kind of fun. But
interesting, yeah.
Four national televised games in January for the Heat. I think that's their best out of any month this year. March might have them beat. Yeah, but they could, yeah. I mean, you look at this next one coming up, the Clippers, Oklahoma City, and Golden State. They're going to be dogs in those three games, we assume. Denver, Utah, and Phoenix, as you said, are not going to be. Phoenix, hopefully, you know, they play the Knicks Wednesday, then they travel to Phoenix on Friday. So they have some time off, some time to travel, kind of get that it's east to west. They can kind of get their heads together and hopefully beat the floundering Phoenix team right now. But then the very next night they go to Utah, and that's not an easy game. So 7-7, I think, would be good. I think that's what we wanted, right? We had the soft beginning. You load up your record. You try to inflate your record as much as you can. They're at 21-13 right now. They probably can't handle 10 losses. That would not be good. But if a 500 record would be fine, I think.
7-7 puts them at 28-20. Not ideal. And clearly this is why some of those wins, some of those games that were losses over the earliest part of the season really come back to haunt you, because you want to give yourself that kind of cushion. This isn't a team of LeBron. This isn't the Big Three era where they can just coast to the regular season and turn it up in the playoffs. They're not that kind of talented. And that's unfortunate to point out, but it's also the reality. And so you need to win these regular season games. You need to produce, and hopefully you can, you know, square away home court advantage if you make it into the postseason. So it's a very difficult stretch. And you're right. I guess 7-7 is probably realistic and a positive. You'd hope that the script would be flipped and somehow they find a way to go 10-4 over that 14 game stretch. But that seems unlikely at this point, because right. You know, Oklahoma City and Golden State, they're nursing injuries a little bit. You know, Kevin Durant might be out for that OKC game with a toe injury. Steph Curry's been limited a little bit, and they still have their, I think they're welcoming back Harrison Barnes tonight, if I'm not mistaken. So
yeah,
they may be at full strength by the time Miami gets up there. And if that's the case, I don't see how they're matched up or they're going to match up well. Now, I did hear that Goran Dragic, I think, was the third highest scoring guard when facing the Warriors in years past. So that's interesting. Something to watch out for. I'm not sure if he just happens to get geared up when he faces the Warriors, or if it's a bad matchup for Curry. Not that it matters at this point, because they've just gone to a new point. Maybe that was Warriors teams of the past and not necessarily this incarnation of the Warriors, which is playing at a historically good rate. But it's still worth pointing out and worth something to look forward to. Hopefully, if Dragic has a really big game against Golden State and gives Miami at the very least a chance at a victory. It's very slim to none.
The Heat are going to have to rely on Dragic a lot. These next six games are all against Western Conference teams who Dragic is very familiar with.
Right.
Played his entire career basically in the Western Conference before coming over to Miami, but you hope that familiarity with whatever kind of familiarity that he has will help the Heat, and they're going to probably rely on him a lot. And I think the whole Whiteside injury is going to be an issue here, because if he misses time going into that Warriors-Clippers, you know, January 11th, January 13th area, that could be very harmful, especially against the Clippers, I think. Maybe not so much Golden State. I think Whiteside would certainly help, but if we're going to go small in that game, as I assume that they would, the Clippers with DeAndre Jordan, you definitely want to have Whiteside in for that game.
And you recall last year, that was one of his breakout games. Yes. Where he had a huge game against him, and he took it kind of personally going up against DeAndre, and he embarrassed him on national television. It was a Sunday afternoon game, if I'm not mistaken, and he kind of really showed up DeAndre there. So,
and this one's on Wednesday on ESPN. So
yeah. Yeah, it's a big matchup. It's a nighttime game. They're at Los Angeles. It's going to be a tough one for Miami without Whiteside. So you hope he'll be back by then.
Yeah. All right. Well, final prediction. Do you want to give a final prediction for January of those 14 games?
Well, let's just look ahead to the following week then.
All right.
So it kind of forces us into doing another podcast rather than going on that long hiatus. we've got games against the Knicks on Wednesday, Friday against Phoenix, Saturday against Utah, and then Monday against Golden State. So those four games, I say they go 3-1.
3-1?
Yeah, I think they're going to find a way to
win
every.
You think they win three straight and then lose to Golden State?
Yes, I do.
So if they were to win three straight, that would put them on a six-game winning streak going into the Warriors. Interesting.
Yeah, build up a lot of hype. That might get the kind of ESPN coverage then at 10:30. It's scheduled for a 10:30 airing, so I mean,
can they flex?
I don't know. I'm thinking they can.
I think NBA TV can, right? Can the NBA TV can make that their game of the night or whatever?
Not on Monday. I think Tuesday. Yeah, fan night or whatever they call
it. Wait, what's today? Today's Tuesday.
Today is Tuesday.
Fan night for? Oh no, I guess not. They just had those pre-scheduled. All right, I don't know what I'm talking about. So I like your 3-1 prediction, but I'm going to say that they probably win against New York. I think they win against Phoenix, and then they drop that back-to-back against Utah, and then they drop the game against the Warriors. I'm going to say 2-2.
Yeah, that seems realistic. I mean, Utah is obviously going through some injury issues with Derek Favors, Rudy Gobert's out, Alec Burke. I mean, they're demolished. You know, they're still playing solid because I think Quinn Snyder has them playing at a pretty high level and focus on defense and things of that sort. But I don't know. I'm hoping that Miami will find a way to overcome their issues. I'm hoping what they'll do is they'll probably blow out Phoenix early enough in the game where Spoelstra sits some of his guys and then be somewhat refreshed for a back-to-back against Utah. That's not an easy one, but hopefully it'll be one that Miami can pull off. So we'll see.
All right. Well, you talked me into it. I like your strategy. 3-1 it is. all right, Dave. Thanks for joining me, and thanks all for listening to the Heat Check podcast. We've been gone for a while, but we are back. We'll get back next week, probably after that Golden State game. Sound good? And then,
absolutely.
Thanks for listening. You can find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. It's the Heat Check Podcast, part of the Hardwood Paroxysm Podcast Basketball Network, whatever it is that we call it. Now with Blog Talk Radio, not Audio Boom. So there's been a change there, so make sure to adjust whatever you need to adjust for that. And thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time. Lyrically, I'm untouchable, uncrushable. In a 600, running in a 600, untouchable, uncrushable, running in a 600, running in a 600. Yeah. I drops every blue moon to separate myself from you kings of the YouTube. I am more YouTube. I am like Bono with the edge. In Mexico, fuck Donald and his pledge. Legend has it, the wrist is magic, the left is Paddock for leaps replaced by my two. Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks. It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.